Hi, investors. Welcome to the Bigger Pockets podcast. I'm your host today, Dave Meyer, and that means we have a bigger news episode. In these bigger news episodes, we take a look at some of the news, some of the data, some of the trends that are impacting our lives as real estate investors. And today we have a really cool episode. We have a great guest, Mike Simonson from Altos Research. If you've never heard or followed Mike's work before, you're going to love this episode because Mike is one of the most experienced experts in housing market data that there is out there. He's been doing this for over 30 years, and his company, Altos Research, provides some of the most up-to-date statistics that you can find on the housing market. And I know not everyone's into statistics, not everyone loves data, but I think what you'll find from learning from Mike is that stats can really help you make actionable decisions and informed decisions about your portfolio. And it's not like you need a degree, you don't need to be good at math, it's none of that. There's just a couple of data points that you should be following that are going to help improve your entire framework and investing decision-making process. Today, we're going to dig into just one stat in particular. It's housing inventory. It really is one of the things that you really just have to understand as an investor if you want to make strong, informed decisions. And Mike, as I said, he really understands inventory better than anyone in the business. So with no further ado, let's just bring on Mike from Altos Research to talk about the current state of the housing market and housing inventory. Mike, welcome to the Bigger Pockets podcast. For those of our audience who don't know you or your company, Altos Research, can you tell us a little bit more about it and how you're involved in the investing industry?
Sure. Well, at Altos, we track every home for sale in the country every week. We do all the pricing, all the supply and demand, all the changes in that data, and we bubble up the analytics on the housing market. We've been doing that for almost 18 years now. And we work with realtors and mortgage loan officers helping buyers and sellers understand what's happening in the market. But we also work with big financial firms and investors and home builders who need to be able to see right now what's happening in the U.S. housing market in any zip code in the country.
Well, that sounds like something we want to hear about. You are truly, I think in the industry, you're just known as like the inventory guy. You've always got like the best numbers on inventory, the most up-to-date stats. So we're super excited to talk to you. And as we'll uncover over the course of this episode, inventory is really driving so much of the dynamics in the housing market. So Mike, let's just start by having you give us a background on inventory and where it sits today.
Yeah. So as of today, we're recording near the end of March here, that 513,000 single family homes on the market around the country, another couple hundred thousand condos, but that is 513,000 is 24% more than last year at this time. It's 102% more than 2 years ago. And if you, what that means really is like, if you walk into the market today in the US, like these are the houses you can buy. There may be some listed tomorrow. There may be some that go into contract today or tomorrow, but these are the ones that are on the market right now. And so 513,000 sounds like it's a lot compared to the last couple of years. It's still pretty dramatically lower than the pre-pandemic time, the last decade. It wasn't that long ago when we would have, you know, maybe 1 million single family homes on the market around the country. And right now there's, you know, just over 500,000, 513,000. It's been climbing each week. And it's been separating from last year. So last year at the end of March, inventory was still falling. We had more buyers and sellers. This year, inventory is building. And so it's separating. You know, last week it was 22% more. The week before that, it was 17% more. So, you know, we're at 24% more homes on the market now than a year ago. And so that'll keep climbing into April. And because that was when inventory turned last year.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for that deep background. I want to give a little public service announcement here for everyone, because what you talked about here is so important, is that the headlines that you see that inventory is skyrocketing, things are going up, are true. As Mike just said, we're up, you know, significant double digits over last year. We're up a lot over 2 years ago. But it's also really important when trying to understand housing market dynamics to take a historic view. And in this case, we can see that inventory is still, you know, roughly half of where it was, you know, not all that long ago. So it's important to understand that context when you're looking at these types of numbers. Now, Mike, I probably should have asked you this question first, but could you please explain for our audience what inventory is? Because there's a lot of different things that are sort of similar, like there's new listings, there's active inventory, there's the total housing supply in the country. When we say inventory, what does that mean?
When we say inventory, we're talking about these are the houses that are on the market now that you can buy. And it actually differs. And that's the inventory number that Altos is tracking every week and that we think is like really valuable. You know, there are different numbers like the home builders. You might hear about new home inventory, but new home inventory includes things like, you know, vacant lots that have like a power drop to them, but there's no home on them. Right. And so we will like take those out of these inventory numbers. You can buy a home with, you know, air quotes there, but it's not actually a home yet. So we're looking at like what are homes that you can buy right now? There's new listings, you know, are the new sellers each week. How many sellers are coming to market? And that's an interesting number to watch also. And that's interesting because last year, the new sellers each week were very low. Record few sellers, people selling homes last year. And so the question is this year, do we have more sellers finally starting to come back to market? And the answer is yes, we do. We have 14% more people selling homes this week than the same week a year ago. So starting to see growth in the number of sellers coming to market. So inventory can grow from the new sellers. It can grow from slower demand.
That's a great explanation, Mike. And just so everyone understands, these are two different metrics. So when you think about a housing market, you have buyers, right? That's the demand side. You think about sellers, that's the supply side. If you want to just measure pure supply, like how many homes are coming on the market, how many people choose to list their property for sale, that is new listings, the second data point that Mike was talking about. What we're primarily talking about today is inventory, which, as Mike said, measures not just how many properties are being put on the market for sale, but also how quickly they are scooped up and come off the market. And so that's why I think it's such an important metric, and we're going to dive into it today, because it measures both supply and demand within the housing market. And that's why it tells us so many things. Okay, so we have now the lay of the land on what inventory is, where it stands today, and we're going to get into how we think these metrics might change in the future right after this break.
What if you could buy new construction homes up to $20,000 below market value? That's right, $20,000 in instant equity. What if you could use that same $20,000 to cover your down payment or score a lower mortgage rate? Talk about being spoiled for choices. Right now, Rent-A Retirement is offering investors their choice of incentives when they invest in a new turnkey property. Your options? Up to $20,000 below retail pricing on new construction homes, aka instant equity. Or a 5% down payment credit. That means less cash out of your pocket. Tired of high rates? Use that $20,000 to lower your interest rate to as low as 3.99% and score free property management for a year. All right, well, now they're just getting crazy over there. Rent-A Retirement's final option? No money down investor loans. Take your choice of instant equity, low or no money down, or a rate as low as 3.99%. To learn more, visit rentoretirement.com. That's rent, T-O, retirement. .com or text REI to 33777, REI 33777, to take advantage of these limited time incentives. Spring is here, and you know what that means. Fresh flowers, fresh air, fresh starts. So why not take a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security? SimpliSafe protects my home during the busy spring season when I'm out leveling up my portfolio. But you know why I really love SimpliSafe? Because it's very easy to install. As a matter of fact, I set up my entire system, my personal home, which is a 4-bedroom, 3-bath, in less than 30 minutes. They've got a super simple app, as whenever we're on vacation, we have friends come by the house to water the plants, check on the house, whatever it is, we're able to turn off our alarm right before our friends get to the house and turn it on right after they leave instantly. SimpliSafe offers a wide variety of high-tech sensors that detect break-ins, fires, and floods. They've got indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch day and night, 24/7 professional monitoring at less than $1 a day, and I challenge you to figure out what you can buy for less than $1 a day. And with the 60-day money-back guarantee, you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. SimpliSafe has given me and many of our listeners real peace of mind, and we want you to have it too. So, go get 20% off of your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplisafe.com/pockets. That's simplisafe.com/pockets. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today.
Welcome back, investors. I'm here with Mike Simonson talking about housing inventory in 2024, and let's just jump right back into it. With that said, Mike, can you just give us a little bit of background on what the implications are for inventory? Like, what does it mean that we have rising inventory that is still somewhat lower than it was pre-pandemic?
The rising inventory, it means more selection for buyers. There are a lot of buyers, especially I'm sure, you know, listeners to this podcast who are very sensitive to rate changes. And so they are maybe waiting until rates drop before they make a move. What we can see though right now is like that selection is starting to improve. And certainly over the pandemic, you know, the pandemic craziness, starting to get back to more normal levels of selection. When inventory rises year over year, that is an indication for future price changes. So we have 24% more homes on the market now than a year ago. That implies that prices, that implies price essentially softness. I'm calling it essentially flat pricing this year for nationally. And so an implication of rising inventory is, you know, we have a different balance to demand versus supply than we did a year ago. A year ago, we had more demand than supply in this moment. The year ended up 5 or 6%. Home prices ended up 5 or 6% last year. And you could see it right now because we had more demand than supply in this first and second quarter. And so now we see that shifted. We see supply growing. And so that implies future, you know, softness. Now, there's no signal in the data for like price crashes, but those are some of the signals that we can see there.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's important that everyone knows that inventory is often how we measure the balance of power, is the way, I guess, is how you would say it in the housing market, right? When inventory is extremely low, that's typically a seller's market because there is more demand for homes than there are homes for sale in the market, giving sellers the power to dictate terms, to negotiate price. This is what we saw during the pandemic, right? This is when people were waiving contingencies and they were off making these crazy offers without seeing homes. On the other side, if there is more inventory, if inventory is high, that signals that there is more supply, there are more homes for sale on the market than there is demand. That puts the power back into the buyer's camp. That's why we call it a buyer's market. And so this is one of the main reasons why looking at inventory is so important, especially, you know, we're talking a national level too, but also looking in your individual market, because even if inventory is doing one thing on a national scale, it might be totally different in another market. Like, Mike, I don't know how much you look at individual markets, but I think of a market I always pick on Austin these days because it's seeing the biggest correction. Great city. No, nothing against it. But you see, inventory has just skyrocketed there over the last couple of years. And that is correlated to a correction in that market. Whereas you look at a lot of markets actually in the Midwest, Northeast, they have a lot lower inventory and prices are really stable there. So just want to make sure everyone understands why looking at this data is so important on a national and regional level.
Yeah. And there are big differences in the national, in the local markets right now. So right now, the Gulf states, the Gulf markets from Southwest Florida around through Louisiana down to some of the Texas markets have the biggest increases in inventory, the biggest year-over-year increases in inventory. So all the way over to Austin. Austin has more inventory now than any time in the last decade. And Austin has been a hot market for a decade. And so like it is the first time it's getting back into a more balanced market, and as rates rose, the inbound, like the California migration, when rates are 3%, it's very easy for someone from California to go like, oh, I'm just going to bid $100,000 over because, you know, it moves my payment by a couple hundred bucks a month. And now they're much more sensitive to that. And so those offers don't get made, those houses build on the market, et cetera. Like that is what happens there. Right now, the Southwest Florida markets, all from Tampa all the way down, Sarasota, Fort Myers, all of those markets have also inventory back to pre-pandemic levels. So 2019 or earlier, and still rising. Some of those markets, it's always a little tricky to go why, but some of the reasons that those markets are slowing and inventory is building is because post boom in the last few years, property taxes and insurance costs have risen dramatically in those markets, and so the holding costs for a home there has grown significantly. And you know, contrast that to California, where your property taxes don't go up. And California has just 7% more inventory now than a year ago, just starting to grow positive. There are five states now that still have less inventory than a year ago. And those are like New York and New Jersey and Illinois and like a few, but each week that gap is narrowing. But still like a lot of the Midwest and Northeast, as you mentioned, are still just now coming off the pandemic lows of inventory. You know, we had dramatic lows and just now starting to climb, where some of the Gulf states are like back to, you know, pre-pandemic levels. So definitely different local things happening. But in general, inventory is rising in all the markets and will continue to rise as long as rates stay high or move higher. If rates fall this year, let's say they're at 7 now and they go to 6.5 or 6.3 or something in the next few months, that trend's going to reverse. That will spur demand. A lot of your listeners, right, will go, hey, I've been shopping at 7%. Suddenly it's 6.3. I'm making a move. That competition heats up, and so that will keep a cap on inventory. It'll actually start bringing it down. But as long as rates stay, you know, here around 7 or high or move higher, that means inventory will continue to climb in the year.
All right. I do want to touch on that, Mike, and talk about rates in just a minute, but I just want to make sure everyone understands, because we've talked a lot and thrown out a lot of different data points here. But to me, and you know, jump in here, Mike, if you think there's something else here, but I think there's two things. If you want to look at inventory in your local market and make sense to you, I think there's two things you should be looking at. One is just the recent trend. So is it going up? How quickly is it going up? And then two is the relationship to pre-pandemic levels. Because I think even if it's gone up 100% and it's still half of where it was pre-pandemic, that's not necessarily a sign that prices are going to start going down or anything like that. So if you want to simplify this, those are two pieces of advice, two easy to find data pieces that I would recommend. But Mike, do you have anything else you would add there?
Yeah. And, you know, we can watch. So I think that's exactly the perspective to watch. So if you're thinking about buying in Southwest Florida and you can see, you know, Sarasota inventory is climbing right now, like that is absolutely something to pay attention to. And, or you know, if you're selling, if you have investment properties in Southwest Florida, like that gives a lot of insight into how you should price a property you might want to sell. We can watch, interestingly, the percentage of homes on the market with price cuts and actually know, is that a lot? So is inventory rising and do we have more price cuts than normal? Because that's another signal about where the impact of rising inventory. So for example, in, you know, Fort Myers, about 50% of the homes on the market have had price cuts right now. That's a little higher than normal, and it's on its way up. Like, those are continuing to be softening signals for home prices and demand in Sarasota and Fort Myers, that area, where, you know, a year ago, Austin was rising inventory and was leading the country in price cuts. Austin's further down the list now, which implies that even though inventory is up in Austin, it has found a little bit of stability in the pricing. And so using both of those together can really be insightful, because a lot of times people will look and they'll go, wow, inventory is rising. Look out below, right? Here comes the crash. And so it's really useful to put a little more context around it. They'll also sometimes go and they'll say, they'll go like, hey, I'm looking around my neighborhood and I see four price cuts. And that's fine. But, you know, it turns out it's a normal level. Like, normally about a third of homes take a price cut. You know, in Phoenix, normally 40% of homes take a price cut before they sell. And so, you know, if you see one down the street that's taking a price cut, that doesn't tell you anything. You got to look at the actual trend over time.
That's a great tip. Thank you, Mike. And I think that's why it's so important, everyone, to just look at data in your local market and try and get as full of a picture as you can in different stats. And Mike gave a great example there. Okay, time for one more short break. More on inventory with Mike Simonson when we come back. Stay with us.
We know, and you all know, why it's super important that good tenant screening is absolutely critical to your management process. Luckily, Rent Ready, the comprehensive property management software, has a new feature that makes tenant screening a breeze. In addition to TransUnion certified tenant screening, Rent Ready now offers proof of income verification. Rent Ready's automatic tenant proof of income verification ensures an in-depth check of each applicant's financial stability. With Plaid certified tenant income and assets reports, you can see a potential tenant's income summary and total earnings by month. All tenant screening and verification is paid by the tenant and done through the desktop and mobile app. It's time to say goodbye to gut check tenant screening and feel confident renting out your property with Rent Ready. And as a matter of fact, all BiggerPockets pros have Rent Ready included in your pro membership. If you're not a pro, Rent Ready is offering you 50% off of their annual plan. New customers visit rentready.com and use code BP2024. That's RENTREDI.com using code BP2024. That's BP, like BiggerPockets, in the year 2024 to save 50% off of 1 year of Rent Ready. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. All of us wish we had more time in the day, but if time was unlimited, what would you spend it doing? Having trouble? Therapy can help. With therapy, you can find what matters most to you and do more of it. Therapy can help you discover what you really want out of life and what your true priorities are. It's more than just talking about trauma or tough times. It can help empower you to accomplish more with less stress and more clarity. The best place to try therapy? BetterHelp. BetterHelp is entirely online. That means it fits your schedule and flexibility, and you don't have to drive through traffic to see your therapist. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/BP today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BP. Listen up, business owners, because I've got some quick little math for you. Fewer costs equal more profit. The problem? You're spending more than ever on operations, materials, deliveries, software, and more. So why not reduce your costs and headaches with NetSuite by Oracle? NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Oh, also, NetSuite lives in the cloud, which means you can reduce IT costs with no hardware required. Cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because now you've got one unified business management suite. You can improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. It makes sense that over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. So don't let rising costs sink your business growth. And by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/biggerpockets. 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 You've heard us talk about it before. High interest rates are crushing real estate investors, leaving even some of the best investors in need of funding now. But with today's liquidity crisis, who can fill the demand? With Fundrise, America's largest direct-to-investor alternative asset manager, you have the opportunity to. Fundrise's new opportunistic private credit strategy was designed specifically for this new market environment. Fundrise supplies high-demand bridge financing on high-quality assets with credit-worthy borrowers. Top real estate investors get the funding they need while you walk away getting paid a healthy interest rate. To date, Fundrise has completed more than $500 million worth of private credit deals with an average net interest of 10.8%, and they've already amassed a pipeline worth more than $300 million. Don't sit on the sidelines. You can take advantage of this unique window of opportunity while it lasts with Fundrise's new private credit strategy. Ready to start? Go to fundrise.com/pockets to learn more. That's fundrise.com/pockets. This is a paid endorsement for Fundrise. Past performance is not indicative of future results. All investments can lead to loss.
Welcome back to Bigger News. I'm Dave Meyer here with Mike Simonson of Altos Research. Let's jump back in. Now, Mike, you mentioned interest rates. It is on top of everyone's mind. Now, I love to play a game here on these podcasts and see if I can get our guests to make predictions about where mortgage rates are going. Are you willing to levy a prediction for us here?
So I will start by saying that I don't predict mortgage rates and that I have been wrong on mortgage rates for 30 years.
Okay. Well, then maybe we don't want to hear your prediction.
Well, if you think about it, like, you know, I bought my first house. I bought an investment property in Chicago, a two flat in, you know, the mid 90s. And, you know, I locked in for 30 years because I thought my 8% rate was a good rate and it could only go up from there. Right. And I bought my second house in 2001 and I locked in for 30 years because I thought rates could only go up from there. So that's what I mean when I've been wrong for 30 years. But here's what we know. Like I said, I don't know where rates are going. What I do know is how the housing market will react if rates go up and how the housing market will react if rates go down. So, higher rates mean more inventory. And you can think about it as demand slows, inventory grows. That is counterintuitive to a lot of people who right now are saying, I just want to wait until rates fall because then we're going to get the inventory and I'm going to get some selection. But it's the data shows the opposite is true. We talked early about new listings and some of those demand indicators. So when rates fall, you'll get more sellers, but you'll get more buyer competition. So if rates fall, demand spurs more than supply, so inventory actually falls if rates fall from here. So you know, rates are right now about 7%. We've been expecting, we being the experts, have been talking about rates falling for 18 months, and they still have not. And if anything, they're headed higher. They've headed higher since January 1. And as a result, we can see the year-over-year inventory climbing in that time. So rates are climbing. Higher rates mean more inventory. Lower rates mean less inventory. And like I said, you can use the think about it as demand slows, inventory grows. So that's really what we can see. We can also see like a jump in rates show up in a bunch of the other stats. So like we talked about price reductions, and we've had rate mortgage rate spikes in September of last year. We had it in September of 22, two big mortgage rate spikes at the end of the year. And almost to the day, we can see the price reductions data turn up at exactly the same time. And what happens is if I'm shopping now at 7% and some news hits and suddenly mortgages are at 7.5 or 7.6, or and marching towards 8, if I'm buying, suddenly I don't make that offer. The seller doesn't get that offer. A few more of those sellers say, wow, I got to cut my prices to spur demand. And so we can watch that impact like to the day of the mortgage rate increases. And likewise, if rates, you know, have been bouncing around here in the sevens for a month, and now are suddenly they move down into the mid sixes, the opposite happens. If I've been shopping at seven, a 6.5 feels great. And that brings me to the second point that I like to make about mortgage rates, which is consumers are more sensitive to changes in rates than to the absolute levels. So, you know, if we're at seven now, and by the end of the year, we're at 5.8, the market is going to queue up to be very hot in 2025. It'll be that adjustment of 120 basis points down, and people will feel a lot of demand will get spurred there. Likewise, the other direction can happen. So consumer people are more sensitive to changes in rates than to the absolute levels.
Okay, well, you just dropped so much good information in there. Let's unpack a couple of these things here. So first and foremost, when we're talking about rates, you mentioned that we don't know and that they might actually go higher. And I just want to clarify for everyone, there are a lot of different opinions about this. We don't have time to get into why rates might go higher, why they might go lower. But I think one thing that we probably can all agree on is that there is a lot of uncertainty about rates. And the assumption that rates are going to go down is not as concrete as I think a lot of people, perhaps on social media or in the mainstream media, are saying. And that just because the Fed is signaling that they're going to cut rates does not mean that mortgage rates are going to go down. They're not tied to the federal funds rate. They're tied to the bond market. It's a whole other topic. But I want to clarify that because people might hear, Mike, you say that rates might go up and they're like, oh, I heard the Fed is going to drop rates. So that's number one. The second thing here that's crucially important to our conversation here is about inventory. And as you said, inventory, for those people who may be theoretically waiting for rates to come down and for inventory to go up, that is not what is likely to happen. Instead, like Mike said, when rates go down, that spurs demand, probably more demand, and it will probably spur a faster increase in the demand side than on the supply side. And that creates more competition and that pushes up pricing. That's why you've probably heard on this podcast or on the other podcast I'm on the market, we talk about this a lot, that if rates go down, people say that they want that, but there also means they're going to face a lot more competition and we might have the type of housing market dynamics that we saw during the pandemic. And I think this is important for investors, homeowners, whatever, to internalize here is that everything's about trade-offs. There is no perfect real estate market that you can invest in. You can invest right now where rates are higher, but there's less competition. Some see that as a benefit. Some see that as a downside. If rates drop, that might make your monthly payment more affordable for a period, but prices will probably go up and you're going to be bidding like crazy. Some see that as a benefit. Some see that as a detriment. So I think it's just important to really, instead of saying now is a good time to buy, now is a good market, thinking about here's what's good about this market and here's how I can operate successfully in this market versus here's what the future market might be and how I might have to shift my strategy in that market.
Yeah, if you are the type of buyer who is able to compete with offers, like maybe you wait. If you are the type of buyer who is got outbid 40 times, you know, over the pandemic, maybe now is when you have the fewer bidders, right? There's definitely those dynamics at play. And, I think the important thing though is that about 6 months ago, a lot of people were asking me, Mike, if rates fall in 2024, as they were expected to 6 months ago. If rates fall dramatically in 2024, would that potentially mean suddenly there's a bunch of sellers who want to sell, who've been waiting because they want to move up and they can't move up. And so they're locked in. So that unleashes a bunch of inventory. And what if a bunch of those sellers come out at the same time and therefore prices drop? And is that so that was a really common question about five, 6 months ago for me. And so, you know, that because the assumption is that rates are high, so nobody's selling. So therefore low rates would mean more inventory. And really what I try to help people understand is that the opposite is true. There's lower rates mean less inventory. Like when we have more demand, I'm going to buy more and own more.
That's an excellent outlook for the next couple of years here, Mike, and an understanding of how people can navigate the market here. Before we get out of here, I'm curious your opinion on the long-term outlook for inventory. And just for some historical context, inventory has been declining basically since the Great Recession, right? Like it spiked up during the Great Recession. I think it peaked in, correct me if I'm wrong, 2011, 2012, something like that.
2012, yep.
And then since then, it's been coming down pretty, you know, linearly. And then it really sort of like dropped off during the pandemic. Do you think it's realistic for us to think that inventory might ever get back to pre-pandemic levels or back to levels that we saw in the early 2010s? Or like what, you know, is this the new normal that we should expect for years to come?
So this is exactly the next corollary to the interest rate discussion. So in that period, that last decade, 2012 through now, interest rates were generally falling. They were generally low and falling. In that period, the 1 year that inventory rose year over year from like January to January was 2018 to 2019. And what happened in that year? Mortgage rates rose by about 100 basis points. They went from like 4 to 5 and inventory rose. Then, you know, 2020 rates dropped dramatically, inventory dropped dramatically. So now we're 2 years into higher rates and we're 2 years into more inventory. So you could imagine a world, it took us a decade down to get of low rates to get to the record few on the market. You could imagine a world of multiple years of higher rates that helps, that allows inventory to build back up. So we've had 2 years of higher rates. We've had 2 years of rising inventory. If we have two more years of rates that are high or rising, that would allow, what happens is you think about the reason inventory has been falling over that decade is because of the investors, like people that, you know, love bigger pockets, right? It's like, I'm buying my next house and at 3%, I'm keeping that first one for my investment property. Now I have two. Now I do that a few times, right? Now I have a portfolio. And we did that 8 million times over the last decade. So now if rates are 7, I want to buy the next one. I have to sell the first one to finance the next one. A few of those investment deals don't pencil out, right? Those go back onto the market. So inventory starts to build. And so it's been 2 years. So multiple years of higher rates get us to build back to towards the old normal. You know, each year we have fewer people. Everybody's got a 3% mortgage, so nobody ever has to sell that house. But there's 5 million home sales a year. So 5 million people have now a 7% and they're not locked in. We have 10 million people because we're 2 years in now. And so, you know, two more years, now there's 20 million people who aren't going to be able to keep that first one, you know, and so those go back into inventory. So over it's a multiple year of higher rates that get us back to the old normal. And likewise, if rates start coming down again, then that'll stop that trend. And things will tighten back up again.
All right. Great analysis. I really appreciate that. I hadn't really thought about that, how every year we go by, the lock-in effect is essentially getting diluted.
Diluted. Yep. 5 million people a year.
Yeah, that's super interesting and definitely something that we'll have to keep an eye on. Luckily, we have you, the inventory guy, to call next time we need to talk about this. Mike, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Bigger Pockets Podcast.
Dave, I always appreciate it. And I appreciate the work you guys do.
Another big thanks to Mike Simonson from Altos Research. If you want to connect with Mike, you can always find his contact information in the show notes or show description. Just as a summary for everyone who is listening to this, there was a lot of discussion of data, different things that you could be tracking, different metrics. But if there's one thing that I think you should take away from this episode is to keep an eye on inventory. I know there's tons of different stats that you can follow, but inventory is so important because, as I said during the episode, it measures both the supply side of the market and the demand side of the market. And as Mike so helpfully explained to us, if you track inventory in your local market, the trends, how it relates to historical patterns, you can get not just a sense of where housing prices might be going, but also help you establish your strategy for how you want to bid on a property. For example, if you know that housing inventory is really high, you might bid at asking price or even try and bid a little bit below asking price because you know that supply is outsizing demand. In contrast, if you're operating in a market where housing supply is really low, you know you're probably going to have to be pretty aggressive with your offers. So by tracking just this one metric, you can learn a ton about housing market dynamics, both on a national level and in your local market. So go check it out. We will put a link to Altos Research. You can also find this data on Zillow, you can find it on Redfin, the realtor.com. This information is relatively easy to come by, so just Google it for your market and go do some research yourself. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode of Bigger Pockets Podcast. I'm Dave Meyer, and I'll see you soon.
The market is changing, and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam! Instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only. Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.